Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we are back this weekend on our show, gearing up for the 2012 Masters coverage. And indeed, it is a very special week in golf. The good news is that virtually all of the game's top players arrived in good form at Augusta National this week. And certainly one of the big storylines is Tiger Woods, the fact that he ended that 2.5-year title drought on the PGA Tour last month at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. That was huge. So he's in his hunt for his fifth green jacket. And U.S. Open champion Rory McIlroy, hey, he is seeking redemption 12 months after that final round meltdown. So we have got the best guest that's coming straight ahead. He is live from the Masters, and it is always a true pleasure to welcome in the CEO of National Golf Schools, Patrick Livingston. And Patrick, it has been way too long. How are you doing?
We're doing fine, and it's been a good golf year from January through to now. And this really is the start of the golf season, you know, the first major at Augusta and the Masters. And it is just a very, very special weekend for spectators, players, anybody that has an interest in golf.
Well, we are the lucky ones because it is so intoxicating when you start following the Masters and, you know, just incredible players. I got to ask you before we get underway, we want to talk about the condition of the course because it has been a very wet and rainy season there in Georgia, but I'm assuming that you're munching a little snack on a pimento cheese sandwich.
That's pretty close. That is darn darn. I actually had a fried egg sandwich, and it was wonderful. So,
well, it's been several years. We were out there. My husband and I went out probably about 3-4 years ago, and so it was a great experience to be a part of it. But do talk to us right now, Patrick, as far as how has the weather affected the course and how are the players responding to it?
Okay, we had an inch and a half of rain yesterday afternoon. They actually called off the par 3 golf tournament that they have traditionally on Wednesday prior to the golf tournament. And it was a pretty good downpour, and you know, several gusts of wind. As a matter of fact, to give you a little bit of a tell you how the Masters does things, they had a tree fall on one of the restrooms out on hole 16, and I mean it fell on top of the restroom. An hour later, there was a crew out there cutting the tree down. They had carpenters working on it you know, end of the evening, and this morning you wouldn't even know that there had been any problem out there whatsoever. So. Masters knows how to take care of things, and an inch and a half of rain is not going to be a problem.
Well, there is nothing quite like the Masters, and we are so delighted to have along with us Patrick Livingston. He is the CEO of National Golf Schools, and there's some really exciting things. You guys continue just to expand your territory. We're going to talk about that momentarily, but certainly one of the biggest storylines and buzz coming into this year's Masters is the fact that Tiger is back, and so he always has thrived and had a lot of success there at the Masters. What are your thoughts on his return?
Well, one, he's healthy for the first time in two and a half years, and he's working with Sean Foley now, and Sean Foley works out of Orange County National in Orlando, and we have a golf school at that location, so I got a chance to talk to Sean, quite a bit, and basically he's done two things with Tiger, and it's not a secret. He's got a little steeper swing plane. Hank had him a little flatter. A little secret swing plane has happened, and he's narrowed his stance a little bit, and that has released some of the pressure that has been going on his left knee. So, one, he's healthy, he's modified his swing plane slightly, and he's got his confidence. He went out and played a wonderful match at Palmer's Course. He actually led the greens in regulation. He's top five in driving, which is amazing. I can't remember the last tournament he was top five in driving, and he just putted wonderfully. So he is certainly tuned up, ready to go for the Masters, and if there's a golf course that matches his game, it's Augusta National. The fairways are fairly generous, no rough to speak of. He's a precise iron player, one of the best putters ever when he had to make a putt. So this course sets up well for his game.
Well, and you know, it's interesting as you were talking about just how he has modified his swing. He is driving the ball extremely well. He's holing putts. He's making those 10-footers. But what about, as far as Patrick, the mental aspect of his game? Because obviously we don't want to recount all the serious wreckage that he had throughout his personal life. But if he can just continually stay focused and stay in the moment, it's going to take him far.
Well, that's critical. I mean, he's always been the toughest mental player out there, you know, prior to all his problems 2 years ago. And that kind of goes on. It may not be well known, but there's a movie being released today by three of his paramours have got together and actually did a movie regarding their relationships with Tiger. A lot of people thought that would really be played up in the press conference each of these days, but it hasn't really come up much at all. So that, you know, those past 2 years are going to still be around. It's going to be interesting to see if he can put that behind him and totally focus on golf.
Well, I like what Tiger said, you know, as far as you talk about just the particular aspect within his game. He said, you know, the importance of making those 10-footers for par, you know, 8 to 10 feet out. He's got to take advantage of those scoring opportunities, and that's going to, you know, as you said, be critical, and that's the mental aspect of the game.
Well, that's true, and he's actually at the press conference. He was asked about, you know, Hank's book on him that came out just, you know several days ago, and he's taken a position that, you know, he hasn't read it, and it's Hank's prerogative to write what he wants. And next question, please.
Well, our next question is, as we are talking to Patrick Livingston, the CEO of National Golf Schools, as we are talking all about the Masters, it's an exciting time of year. I do want you to share a little bit with us as far as just the layout of the course. There was a lot of conversation about the first hole and just how there's a lot of bite to it. It's super tough. It can be brutal. And it is 455 yards long, and the bunker is now bigger. And that's kind of tough because you like to have that momentum, and it energizes you to, you know, get off to a fast start and attack the course.
Well, yeah, that used to be a fairly mundane road. You'd hit a hole, you'd hit a 8-iron into it, you know, take a par, birdie, move on, and try to birdie in par 5, too. Now they've stretched it out. They've, you know, you say they've widened the bunker, and it is a very, very difficult first hole. It becomes a par hole rather than a birdie hole. And they tinker with the course a little bit, not like they did 5 years ago when they lengthened the course by 200 yards to help you know, deal with the, you know, new condition of the shafts and a little better ball, and to try to make it the same competitive course it has been for, you know, its total existence.
Well, it is a demanding first hole. There's always a lot of bogeys on that particular one. But one of the other guys we do need to highlight is, talk to us about Roy McIlroy. We all know it's all been chronicled and talked about, you know, how he had the big meltdown on Sunday last year. How do you feel like his game is at this point?
Well, it was a mental aspect. You know, he got in, he was leading the tournament by one shot coming into 10. You know, hit a shot left, got a bad break. He hit left off a tree over near Eisenhower's, you know, cabin, but proceeded to bogey the next hole, four-putted 12. That was a complete mental breakdown, and that was one of the strong points of his game. And it was, again, he was talking at the press conference about he would have liked to won the tournament last year. This year, he's coming in with a more business-like manner, trying to figure out ways to win it, being more matter-of-fact than, you know, awestruck by Augusta National.
How do you change your approach to the game? Of course, I mean, Rory McIlroy, such a young guy, what, 22 years old when he was in last year's tournament?
Correct.
How does he change his approach as far as you were talking about having more of a business-like manner as far as, do you just totally eliminate all the outside distractions and media stuff and just try to stay in your own little zone?
Yeah, you try to stay in your own zone, and, you know, you're an athlete, and you know when you were playing basketball that, you know, sometimes when you went up for a shot, you knew it was going in. Same thing in golf. Sometimes you get behind a putt, you know it's going in, you have to get, you know, in that state of mind. And, you know, to his credit, he backed off his bad round. He shot 80 the last day last year, worked on his game, went down to Congressional, and won the U.S. Open going away.
Yeah.
It was, you know, one of the, you know, finest, you know, turnarounds and probably, you know, any other player's ever had. And now he's, you know, he feels like he's got an opportunity to win if he hits the ball in the right place on the greens, and if you make some putts. And in Augusta National, it's, you want to make putts, but it's more important to hit it in a position where you won't three putt. The angles are just incredible. You may have a 15-foot putt with a 12-foot break.
Wow.
If you get behind the hole, and you have no chance of making it, and a very good chance of three-putting. So positioning yourself around this course is incredible. You go to the number four, you know, just a little par three of, you know, 6-7-iron, 8-iron for these guys. If you don't, you know, hit that to the right center of the green, keep the ball on that little plateau, you're in deep trouble. You can get it in the middle of the green, it's simply going to trickle off the left side. So a birdie opportunity turns into a bogey, very, very quickly on this course.
We have hit on Tiger. We've also talked about Rory as he is looking for his redemption. But what about Luke Donald? I mean, how can he be more successful at Augusta National? He seems like he's a little bit of a short hitter, and he certainly has an impressive resume. But this is one of those courses that he wants to take care of business on, doesn't he?
Well, it is. It's a tough course for him because it really is a long ball hitter's course. And if you turn the ball, hook the ball slightly, it's to your benefit also. Again, the fairways are fairly wide open. You can hit, all the par fives if you're a medium to long hitter. But Luke is so precise on this iron play. I mean, that's where his game is.
Right.
And the 7-iron, the 8-iron, the pitching wedge, 9-iron, that's his forte. And if he can get the ball, out there in position where he can be hitting the shorter irons, he's going to be a factor. As a matter of fact, we saw him play at the Traditions, in Tampa. And that's a long golf course. It's a course that, the pros like. It's called Copperhead. And he played well, kept in this game, and ended up winning in a playoff with a wonderful 7-iron into number 18, about 6-7 feet, and made that to win the playoff with Jim Furyk and two other guys.
Well, of course, he tied for fourth last year at the Masters, but I have to share, we're supposed to be impartial in media and unbiased, but I'm a big fan of Phil Mickelson. Of course, probably the reason why is my son's a lefty, and of course, Phil is too. So he's certainly one of the wonderful storylines, and he is playing with so much confidence right now.
He is. And I was with him, but I was at the putting green this morning, and he had set up tees at 25, 30, 35 feet on some really undulating putts, and he hit it inside of, 2.5 feet every time. And it's all about pace. If you have the right pace, you're either going to be very close or you're going to knock the putt in. It just seemed like he had a great feel this morning. If that can translate to the course, he's going to be in great shape.
Just a few more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with Patrick Livingston, the CEO of National Golf Schools, and we definitely are going to talk a little bit about that and some of the things that they are doing within that organization. But Charles Schwartzel, of course, won the 2011 Masters. He hasn't been on the radar too much. Talk about his progression this year.
He's out of form, and that happens to all pros for a certain period of their career, and you have to go back, work with your coach, practice, try to get back in form, and he simply is done. He's done very, very little the first part of this year, and he struggled. And even though he is a past champion, he's pretty far down the list as far as potential winners.
Patrick, who is the dark horse that you feel that could really break out in this particular tournament? Because, I think of like Ricky Fowler, such big expectations on him. And last year he had, four top 10 finishes? He's only 23 years old. But
he needs a win so bad.
He does.
It breaks my heart when he gets close like that and can't quite pull it off.
Patrick Livingston with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And let's talk about National Golf Schools because there's some exciting things that are taking place right there in Orlando, Florida. Tell us about the Mystic Dunes and how you guys have teamed up.
We have teamed up with Mystic Dunes. It's a Gary Koch course that is 2 miles from Disney. And it's a wonderful golf course. You have a lodging of 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom condos. You have 3 or 4 restaurants on property. It is just, it's the closest golf course, to Disney, and it's a wonderful experience. Just highly recommend it, for a great Disney golf experience, and really happy to have them on board. And I need to mention, Stream Song.
Okay.
Stream Song is just coming on the radar, and this is a 36-hole resort done with Crenshaw Coors and Tom Doak, two of the premier architects out there now. And it's a very, very interesting story in that they collaborated on these two courses together. Okay, and The property is 3,500 acres, and there's a lot of sand dunes, a lot of lakes. And what it was the Mosaic Company out of Minnesota had dug phosphate mines there. They're the largest producer of phosphate in the world. And they had all this great acreage, and they're kind of giving back to the community by building two phenomenal courses. It doesn't look like Florida. It looks like the Oregon coast, just tremendous courses. They have a great pro shop, 12 suites in the pro shop, 222-room resort hotel, great practice area. It's one of the few resorts being built in the country at this time. Golf is hit a lull, and it's very few new courses going. These are going to be two of the top 100 courses almost as soon as the open play, and it'll be opening this August.
Patrick, we are running out of time, and I know that there are so many golf schools. Tell all of our listeners, first of all, where they can go and find out information about some of these golf schools, but what makes yours stand apart? What makes it unique against all the other resort golf schools that are out there?
Several things. We use all PGA pros as our teachers, and we don't try to change your swing. We try to make your swing the most efficient it can be, and work and specialize a lot of work on your short game, the chipping, pitching, putting, bunker shots that can really, you know, lower your score. Plus, we're a resort golf school where we have 100 locations nationwide, five around the world, and we're there to, you know, have a golf school, but really enjoy yourself and play the game of golf.
And tell all of our listeners where they can go and find out more information.
Please go to www.nationalgolfschools.com. All of our information is there. We would love to talk to you.
And you have a new videotape that's going to be coming out too, right? We got to give a plug for that.
We have a videotape coming out. It's in the editing stages now. That'll be on our website in 2 weeks. And if you come out to one of our golf schools this year, you get a complimentary copy of the videotape, and it is right in line with all the teaching we do during the school.
You've been listening to the voice of Patrick Livingston, the CEO and president of National Golf Schools. We have had him on our program so many times, always does a wonderful job. I still cannot believe that we've not had the opportunity to meet. So you've got to get out here to the Colonial coming up in May. That's just around the corner.
I am putting it on my calendar, and if you give me two aside, I'll play it.
Oh, there you go. Okay, sounds good, Patrick. Well, listen, enjoy your time in Augusta, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, but who do you think is going to win it all this year in 2012?
I'm going to take Woods because he's at the top of his game.
Wow,
and,
okay.
I'm ready to see him come back and take his position in the top, the golf field.
And I think all the fans are too. And like I said, there is nothing quite like the Masters. And enjoy your time out there. Safe travels. And Patrick, we will talk to you again real soon.
It's been a pleasure.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.
Working here in the Barnett Shale requires that you have the best equipment available because every job counts. Put Energy Weld Fab to work on your next project. Energy Weld Fab manufactures oil and gas production equipment, as well as fabrication of custom vessels, piping, and structural steel. The Energy Weld Fab sales staff has a wealth of knowledge working here in the state of Texas and other regions, as some of their biggest clients are folks like EOG, Chesapeake, Quicksilver, and XTO. Call Mike Clements at Energy Weld Fab's team today with your questions and ordering information at 903-297-2500. That's 903-297-2500. Energy Weld Fab is your number one choice for oil field and production equipment because they understand that every job counts. That's Energy Weld Fab at 903-297-2500.
Texans know all about taking what we're given and turning it into something good. But finding solutions isn't always easy. Sometimes you need the backing of a bank like Pinnacle Bank that understands your unique banking needs. Here when you need us, that's the Texas way. And at Pinnacle Bank, we think that's the way banking should be. Visit us online at pinnbanktx.com. Pinnacle Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Elissa Walker-Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And before we get underway with our second interview, we want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And I have to share with all of you, it has been a while since we've had the opportunity to tee it up and talk about the game of golf. The 2012 Masters, of course, is less than 1 week away, and it is always so wonderful to celebrate the game, the sport we love, by inviting in James Dotson, who has just released a brand new, a fascinating book, and I want to encourage all of you to go out there and get a copy of it. It is titled American Triumvirate, Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, Ben Hogan, and the Modern Age of Golf. Welcome in, James. It's great to have you with us.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, tell us about your brand new book, because I know you had a lot of fun chronicling these golfing legends and sharing, you know, the impact that they had with the game and how they changed it.
Well, that's really true. I was very fortunate to help Arnold Palmer write his memoirs. And then the Hogan people, Ben Hogan's estate, called and asked me they offered to sort of let me have access to Ben's kind of never before opened up private files and his friends and family who'd never really spoken publicly about Ben, who was really probably the most certainly the most guarded and mythologized golfer and maybe athlete in American history. So I did that, and it was really quite wonderful. I had a blast, and it was a bestseller. And I, the funny part about that was I had done over 120 interviews for that book, and I had a lot of old stars that grew, that were contemporaries of Snead and Hogan and Nelson, and I couldn't get it all into the Hogan book. So that came out. That was the golf book of the year in 2005. And I really just, I was very close with Sam Snead. I knew him. I wrote a book called Final Round that 15 years ago that he was in. And I knew Byron Nelson. And ironically, I didn't know Hogan. He had passed away before I had would have had a chance to meet him. And long story short, I felt sort of obliged to sort of honor these two guys because I've always kind of felt Snead and Byron never got the credit they were due for really shaping the modern game. So that's what I set out to do, tell this story about these three remarkable men, all born, by the way, on three consecutive days of the week, a Sunday, a Monday, and Tuesday, exactly 3 months apart in 1912, the year the Titanic sank, the year Fenway Park opened, the year most major cities in America got electric lights for the first time, the year General Electric introduced a newfangled thing called an electric dishwasher. So it was a real change point in American history, a real sea change time in America. And they came out of the poorest neighborhoods. One was from the mountains of the Blue Ridge. The other two were from good old Fort Worth. And they really made an impact on golf that is being felt today. When you watch a PGA Tour event today, you see things that Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan and Sam Snead innovated years ago.
Well, you know, as golfing fans, we are just so spoiled today. I mean, just all the modern technology and the game has really evolved and changed over time, James. But what were some of the challenges that Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, Ben Hogan, that they faced during their time playing golf?
Start with this. In 1930, Bobby Jones retired from golf. He won what was called the Grand Slam. He won the major championships of Britain and America, and he decided he had had enough. He was 30 years old. He was tired of competition. He basically retired from the game and went back to law school. When there were two other players that were probably the stars of the game, Walter Hagen, who was a real showman, and Gene Saracen, who was a young, cocksure, strutting character who won the U.S. Open twice. But the irony was that they were really tired of kind of traveling, and they were not playing as much. And after Jones left the game, there was left a void. And, of course, in 1929, the stock market crashed. Golf was a rich man's game in America prior to that time. Half the clubs in America closed. Half the clubs in America shut down, shut their doors, plowed up their fields. And these three were country boys. Or as Byron was a sunny Christian lad who was born in Waxahachie and survived typhoid fever at age 10 and gave his life to the Lord, believed it was a sort of a miracle that he survived. Ben Hogan was a man whose father shot himself in front of him. His father ran a stable, and his father was his hero. When the stable closed down in Little Dublin, where there's a fabulous new Hogan Museum, let me make a plug for them, just opened, a fantastic place.
Wow.
Ben's mother moved him to the bright lights of Fort Worth, found a job as a seamstress, and Ben literally went to work on the platforms of the grand old Texas and Pacific Railroad depot, selling papers all night. Often woke up in the morning on the bench with his aviator cap pulled over his eyes. And then you had, of course, Sam Snead grew up in the most rural vertical county of Virginia, in the Blue Ridge Mountains. So they were all children of poverty in a way, as most Americans were, but America was in the grip of the Depression for most of their young lives, growing up in the 20s, and then when they came of age as golfers in 32, 33, there really wasn't much. There was very little of a tour. It was a roustabout, a vagabond game, and they all set forth to sort of try to make a mark, to make a few bucks. It took Hogan three times. He tried and failed to make it on the tour three times. Went bust all three times, never won. Nelson kind of caught fire first, won a few tournaments, and was his sunny, happy disposition really endeared him to people, and people helped him. And then Sam Snead was a colorful character. You know, and that's really the fascinating thing about this book. You could not have had three more different men between whose personalities and life experiences were very different, and each of them had a huge impact on the game. We'll start with Ben. Ben was Byron. Byron, as I say, was this sunny, cheerful man who grew up to become the great ambassador of the game. He left the game in 1945. He was 46. He retired 45. He won 18 tournaments in 1 year, if you can fathom that. 11 in a row at one point. He retired the next year at age 34, right where Tiger Woods was last year. He had just grown kind of weary and wanted to own his own ranch. Ben Hogan, who didn't win until 1940, won his first tournament at Pinehurst in 1940, and then became a kind of a whirlwind. He taught himself. He was probably the least talented of the three, but he had the hardest work ethic. He became very slavish. He developed routines of practice on the practice tee that are commonplace today, and he really became the kind of poster boy for the underdog in America. So during the Depression and during World War II, when Hogan started to finally win in 40 and 41 and 42, he became a figure that people watched because the feeling was, here's a guy who really didn't have a lot of gifts, but he had a work ethic that caused him to become the greatest player probably ever. And lastly, there was Snead, who was colorful and funny. I contend that Sam Snead in 1936, 37, when he broke through and won, was really the reason the PGA Tour survived. It was struggling. It was really just a loose alliance of clubs, tournaments that were stretched across the country, and it was about to basically fold up in 36 and 37. The players were fighting among themselves. There wasn't really much money to be won. Along comes Sam Snead, this colorful, funny, folksy character from the mountains of Virginia who always had a kind of clever quip, and he was great-looking. He knew how to dress. He put golf back on the front pages of the sports pages of America for the first time since Bobby Jones had left the game. And that really was kind of the touchstone, the beginning of the rebirth or the birth of the modern PGA Tour.
We are having a wonderful conversation with James Dodson. He's an award-winning writer. He's got a brand new book that is out. And James, tell all of our listeners where they can go and get a copy of it.
Well, I'm sure it's at your Barnes & Nobles and Amazon's and all your bookstores. I'm very, very pleased. It's gotten wonderful reviews because people who love the game, I think, have always heard about these mythic figures. They're kind of the grandfathers of the tour, and they are our American triumvirate, and is what I call them. And it's around all the bookstores.
Of course, it is titled American Triumvirate, and I am curious. You know, we were talking about Byron Nelson, and that he did retire at such a young age. I mean, 34 years old after just 14 years playing pro. Did he regret that?
No, I don't think he did. Byron, who, as I say, I knew, and his wife Peggy was just—they were just great. His second wife Peggy. Byron, I think, was driven by different. Each had a different kind of motivation. Ben Hogan's. Let's start with him. Ben Hogan was driven by this kind of internal. I hate to say demon, but a desire to be somebody because he was a runt, and as I say, I talked to a lot of psychologists for the first Hogan biography about what the effects of having your father shoot himself in front of you would do to you. And Hogan's life struggles were all about becoming an insider. He wanted to be somebody, and he became the ultimate, in many ways, the ultimate golfer of success. Certainly the most mythic figure that ever played the game, besides Bobby Jones. Byron was, as I say, this sunny, cheerful kid who really did believe his principles of the Church of Christ, and I think he wanted to seriously become a man who had an influence on other lives. He spent most of his career, incidentally, as a club professional who played tournaments. The other two kind of had club associations, so Byron took his work very seriously. He worked at Inverness and several other Reading and several wonderful clubs and really loved the interaction with the members. He loved teaching the game. He became a great teacher, a great mentor, people like Tom Watson and Tom Kite. A whole host of young Texas stars, Corey Pavin and Ben Crenshaw and others really became his kind of pupils. He's very generous with his time. He's also kind of the father of the modern golf swing. Golf shaft changed from wooden to steel in about 1935, 36, as these guys were starting to win or to play. And Byron really developed a modern swing, and I go into some detail talking about how he did that. Incidentally, the testing machine the USGA uses is called Iron Byron, and that's for a good reason. Byron was probably the straightest shot maker who ever lived. And as I say, Snead, lastly, had probably the most athletic golf swing anybody had ever seen. He was really, people talk about Tiger Woods being an athlete. Sam Snead was a five-letter athlete in high school, and he could have chosen to play many sports, but golf was his first choice, and he had the most amazing natural swing ever. So I think Byron's case, he didn't miss tournament golf. He did what he wanted to do. He won, over 50 tournaments and by his count, close to 75 tournaments. The tour didn't give him as many as they should have. And he was a guy who, as I say, loved the social interaction of the game and the values of the game, and that really became his forte. So he really didn't miss it too much. He still played in Masters all the way up through the early 60s, the mid-60s, that was he believed in perpetuating the game. That was really his strength.
Well, congratulations on the book, James. You certainly provide some fascinating details on three very talented men that grew up, as you had said, in some very tough times during the Depression and left quite a legacy that we all appreciate and love so much, especially right here in Fort Worth, Texas. So, James, thanks so much for stopping by. Again, the title of the book is American Triumvirate, Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, Ben Hogan, and the Modern Age of Golf. And as James had said, you can go anywhere online and at Barnes & Noble and pick up a copy of that. Hopefully, we'll see you here in Fort Worth at the Colonial. Okay, James?
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.